Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bit Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
Happy Friday. It is Social Distance Central. Brendan Batchelor with you, joined once again by Jamie Dodd. Bit Nizar is away, but he will be back on Monday. And we've got a great show for you today. We'll find out the winner of Game of Takes and have them live on the air with us later this hour. And Jamie, your first chance to take part in Game of Takes, it absolutely came right down to the wire. We are going to confirm a winner later on in the show, but you know, this is one of the closest races that I've seen in any Twitter poll, let alone just Game of Takes.
It was exciting right to the end. And yeah, I was really happy to be a part of it. I think it's a testament to the work put in by both of our contestants. I'm excited to announce the winner, and I'm excited to tee up some topics for next week, too.
So we'll do that later on in the show, and we will let you know whether Jordan maintained his hold atop the composite throne or whether Ty has come in and knocked him out of his perch later on in the show. We're also going to get into some Canuck talk here in just a minute. Travis Green was on with the guys on the starting lineup this morning. If you missed that interview, you can hear the whole thing online at sportsnet.ca/650. You can also find it on the Sportsnet app on your smartphone if you want to listen back. And Travis Green, has apparently lost 15 or 20 pounds, so full credit to him for that. I was feeling pretty accomplished at having dropped like 5 pounds during quarantine, so he's got me beat pretty well.
Travis Green and I apparently are living very different quarantine lifestyles. If he's been losing 15 to 20 pounds, we're very different people, as if I didn't know that already.
So we'll hear from Travis Green and some of his thoughts this morning. You get into that in just a moment. Do also want to remind you that it is phase one of the NHL's draft lottery today, and we will have that live on the air here on Sportsnet 650 later this afternoon, starting at 5 p.m. So again, the NHL draft lottery phase one will be live on these airwaves later this afternoon. And Jamie, we touched on it briefly yesterday, but I would imagine that if you're not a fan of one of the teams that has a direct vested interest in the results of this lottery, so you're a Red Wings fan or a Senators fan, you know, certainly you understand people that would really be gearing up for tonight and wanting their team to potentially have a chance at using the first overall pick to take either Alexi Lafreniere or Quinton Byfield. Of course, we had Cam Robinson on the show yesterday. He's got Byfield ranked ahead of Lafreniere. But either way, as much as the fans of those teams will be rooting in a specific direction for the result tonight, I know I speak for myself, and I can speak for you on this, I assume, as well, that I want chaos. I want an absolute debacle. I want all three of the top three picks to be from teams in the playoffs. That's what I'm cheering for tonight.
That's absolutely the dream. There's no question about it. And, you know, beyond that, I think it would also be kind of funny to see Ottawa either, you know, get 1 and 2 and just have the complete dream scenario, or the opposite and fall out of the top three altogether with both of their picks. I think either of those would also be really funny. Basically anything weird. That's what I want. And the weirdest possible outcome is definitely all three of the teams being mystery teams from the play-in round. So I want the weirdest situation possible. And it is kind of nice also just to be in a situation where, you know, as a Canucks fan, you don't have to worry about the lottery. Who cares? There's really no stakes on the procedures going on tonight.
Yeah, I guess the only way that you would really start to become invested in it is if there's a scenario where one of the top three picks is from a placeholder team, or two, or even three. Because then at that point, we can have the conversation about, well, you know what? If the Canucks lose, they've got a pretty good shot at a top three pick as well, especially if it's all three of them. We talked about this earlier in the week, that I don't have it off the top of my head. I think it's like a 35% chance going into that second phase of the lottery if all three of the top three picks come from outside that playoff picture, or inside that playoff picture, I guess.
Yeah, it would actually be very, very good odds at that point. And, you know, maybe if you're a Canucks fan sitting there and saying, I don't think they have a chance against the Wild, I think they're big underdogs in that series, then yeah, you're probably rooting really hard for the placeholder teams to come up, because it's going to be a really nice bonus potentially for any of the teams that do get knocked out in the play-in round, because you got a little bit of taste of action. You didn't have to tank, but you still get a shot at that top three pick.
I also have to take a bit of a victory lap on the show today. And that's not normally something I would do, but anytime you get a chance to dunk on Andrew Walker on Twitter and you pull it off,
oh man,
I think you need to talk about it. And I know Walks talked about how taken aback he was by it on their show yesterday. But for those of you that aren't in on the conversation, I sent out a tweet yesterday just after it was announced that Vancouver wouldn't be a hub city, tongue-in-cheek, saying Edmonton is about to become your friend that dates that person you turned down, which, of course, refers to Vancouver, or BC more specifically, and provincial health officers not being willing to budge on some of the things the NHL wanted. And of course, Walks, as he likes to do sometimes, gets into my mentions and he says, like you would know what that feels like. So I had to jump back, and I just said, okay, I should put it in terms that you can understand. Vancouver just ghosted the NHL. And he was not pleased. I got a text message afterwards, but I was proud.
I mean, you got him, man. You got him. There's no doubt about that. I saw it unfold in real time. It's like a KO pretty clearly on your part there. You nailed it. And I mean, it's the kind of thing. The thing about Walker is he sets himself up for that, because, you know, you've been around. You're not in the office every day, but you've been around enough that he talks about getting ghosted and his troubles in the romance department all the time at the office.
Open about
Very open. It's not like it's a secret. So, of course, he's going to get a little ribbing about it.
Yeah, so anyway, that's my victory lap, and we can move on from that. If you want to send your questions or thoughts into the show, you can always reach us 650-650 on the text line at Batch Hockey, at Jamie Dodd, and at Sportsnet 650 on Twitter. We will get to Game of Takes and our winner later on in the show. But Travis Green was on with the starting lineup this morning here on Sportsnet 650. He's back in Vancouver. Lean, mean Travis Green, as I think we're going to have to call him now, after he's dropped 15 to 20 pounds, he says. And they got into a number of topics with him. We're not going to replay the whole interview, but we've got a couple of clips that we want to pick out and talk about here. You can listen back to the entire interview if you missed it online, as I said, at sportsnet.ca/650. But Travis Green with some interesting things to say, and this is the clip I want to start on, where he talked about a comfort zone for his players and how they're going to have to try to push out of it returning to play.
I don't want to sit here and say, okay, I have the perfect answer right now, because I think you kind of need to see your players. I'm hoping that, you know, they get on the ice here in Vancouver into some small group situations, and our medical staff and our strength staff get to see them and talk to them and see how they're feeling. Again, that, you know, that goes back to that communication that you need to be on top of, really, and see where your players are at, but also understand that you're going to have to push them. We're going to have to push outside our comfort zone, and it has to be hard enough to get you to a point that we need to be to play ultra competitive hockey games that aren't just exhibition games and feeling your way into the year. So it's going to be a fine line between getting them ready and making sure that the timing's right and how hard we push them. And, you know, our guys are, I got a lot of faith in our team that they'll be ready. So I'm not too worried about it at all, but I'm also going to make sure that we're on top of being mindful and different situations and different players.
So there's Travis Green this morning from the starting lineup, and it will be interesting. And, you know, in all likelihood, this will be happening behind closed doors, so we may not be able to get access to watch these on ice sessions and report on them like we normally would. But, you know, Travis Green's going to learn a lot about the group that he's got when he gets them back into town for training camp on or around July 10th. Because in many ways, you know, you're starting from scratch again, like it's a new season. And in fact, it's, I don't even think it's comparable to a new season, just because when you have a full off season, guys are still able to, you know, go to the gym every day.
Yeah.
And they're still able to get on the ice every day. And, you know, not that some of these guys won't have been doing that as much as possible, but I would imagine their on ice time through most of this pandemic was at the very least limited, if not completely inaccessible. You know, we talked to lots of players on the Canucks who were, you know, doing home workouts that were being provided for them by the team. So, you know, if regular training camp is the start line, it almost feels like the Canucks are starting, you know, 50 meters behind the start line in many ways. And that's a lot of ground that Travis and his coaching staff are going to have to help them make up in order to go from that point where, you know, you're just getting back into shape and getting back with your teammates and used to being on the ice as a big group again. And then just a few weeks later, you're playing win or go home games.
It's a completely unique situation. None of the players involved or the coaches involved have ever been through anything like this. And you're right. It's tempting just to say, okay, it's another training camp, just like you would have after a summer. But it's really totally different than that. On Reach Deep yesterday, we spoke to former Canuck Frankie Corrado, and he won't be a part of this process. You know, he was playing in the AHL this year. He's going over to Sweden for next season. But we asked him just how difficult it would be to get your body up to speed in this kind of scenario. And, you know, what he said was, look, after the season, normally you maybe take 2-3 weeks off, but then you're right back on the ice ramping up. And, you know, Batch as well as I do, like, even if these players aren't necessarily, they don't stay in the city where they play, but wherever they live, there's probably other NHL players around, and they're probably skating informally with them over the summer. They're working with a trainer. They're doing all these off-ice exercises, and really they haven't had access to almost any of those things. So it's not just like you're coming into a normal training camp and have to ramp up playoff intensity right away. You're starting from a position much further back than normal, and then you don't get the extended exhibition season to really ramp things up. You have to go basically, I think there might be one exhibition game they're talking about.
Two games, I believe.
Two games, yeah. And then you're into a playoff series. And I think it's going to be fascinating. You know, Travis Green used the word comfort zone. Everyone is going to be out of their comfort zone. And the team that is able to handle that situation the best, those are going to be the teams that have the best chance of advancing. One of the things I'm really curious about is, you know, every time the playoffs roll around, we always talk about playoff experience and how important it can be. And one of the factors of that is, you know, if you've been in the playoffs before, you know what to expect in terms of the hype and the media attention and the crowd noise and all of that. Well, none of that's going to be here this time. And how intense are these games going to be? And I wonder if, you know, almost a young team that doesn't have a lot of playoff experience and isn't expecting what they've seen in the past could have a bit of an advantage, just because this is new to everyone. And it's going to be new. It's going to be equally new to all teams involved. No one is going to have experience in this situation.
Well, and there are so many factors that could give teams a potential advantage or disadvantage. You know, if a team like the Canucks, for example, they've got a lot of Swedes. Well, in Sweden, things have been open and running relatively normally for much longer than they have been in North America. So, you know, Jacob Markstrom, when we spoke to him, it feels like it was a week ago, but it's probably 2 months ago now with the way this pandemic has gone. But he was talking about the fact that, you know, other than the fact that he wasn't on the ice at that time, it was like a regular off season for him. He was going to the gym. He was working with his personal trainer. So there is a distinct possibility that teams that have more Europeans or maybe more Swedes in particular could just have that extra leg up because these guys have had a more normal off-season type experience than many of the people in North America. You can also look at, you know, is a younger team going to have a better advantage because, you know, they're going to be less likely to deal with soft tissue injuries or the things that you could certainly expect from guys coming back after this, you know, long of a time off, that You know, will there be some tweak groins and hamstrings and things like that in training camp? Almost certainly there will be. So yes, you know, a young team could have an advantage in that regard. But then, you know, you talk about playoff experience, and while this won't be like a normal playoffs, a veteran player has seen a lot of things in his time in the NHL. Now, nobody has ever seen anything like this, but as you get older, you know, you're maybe not quite as shaken by things that surround the game. Like older players talk about being able to narrow their focus and tune out some of the outside. Yeah. So could that help these guys where you can narrow your focus and you can tune out all of the, you know, the weird things happening around this, that there aren't going to be fans, and all of that stuff, that the arenas are likely going to be quiet unless they choose to pipe crowd noise in. So that's the fascinating part about speculating on all of this, is that we have no answers. Like, we might at the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs be able to look back and be like, there was a definite advantage for the young teams, or there was a definite advantage for Europeans.
Yeah.
But right now we have absolutely no idea. And until it plays out on our TV screens for us to watch, all we're going to be able to do is throw around ideas like this without any real answers.
Well, and the point you make about, you know, the idea of some veterans being able to narrow their focus and really just lock in on what's happening on the ice, I think it's interesting when you talk to players about crowd noise and the impact it has. I think you get a pretty wide range of responses from some guys who say they absolutely feed off of it and they love playing in front of a loud crowd. Even if it's a hostile crowd, that drives them too. And then you hear from other players who say, like, basically, I tune it out. I'm not even aware of what's happening in the crowd because I'm so locked in. And it's not uniform by any means. And we have no way really of knowing how either of those types of players are going to react to this situation. We have a good text coming in here from Jake in Port Moody. 650, 650 is the text message inbox. Join the conversation. He says, hi guys, every team is in the exact same boat. It will be whoever is gelling together at the right time. It can be a complete crapshoot, unlike anything that we have seen before. And that, I think that's what it comes down to, is if you're trying to handicap these races, if you're looking, you know, oh, what's the smart bet going to be in the play-in round, good luck to you. If you can figure out a method of choosing that, you're smarter than I am.
Well, to me, if I was going to do that, if I was going to say, okay, I'm going to lay money on a team, what I would be looking for is a team that is not on the older side of the league. So a team that's at least in the top half in terms of averaging the youngest age, just because of some of those injuries. And then I think you'd also want a team that has a core that has been together for a while and has had some level of success. And the reason I say that is because, you know, for many teams, this is going to be a sprint just to get back in shape and feeling well, let alone working on systems and chemistry and things like that. So if you've got a group, you know, they're not in the play-in round, but a team like the Boston Bruins, who large pieces of their core have been together for many years.
Yeah.
Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron know what to do when each other are on the ice because they've played a long time together. Those are the teams that are going to have that advantage. And not to say that this could be a disadvantage for the Canucks, but, you know, as much as, you know, Elias Pettersson and JT Miller have had great chemistry, they've only played, what, 60 games together? Just shy of 70 games together? Whereas, you know, you look at some of these teams that have been more established for a longer period of time that have built-in chemistry that they'll be able to rely on in a situation where you're not going to have as much time or not as much focus as you might like on systems. Those are the teams that if I was going to put money down, you know, the Boston Bruins are always going to be a good bet to put money down on to do well in the playoffs, just based on the success they've had and the kind of season they were having. But it's teams in that conversation where they could just have an advantage from the experience they have, not necessarily playoff experience, but experience playing together as a group.
I think that's a really good point, Batch. Continuity is underrated across all sports, I think, and even in the NHL, even in a normal year, it's hugely important to, you know, you don't have to spend time learning how the other guys play. You don't have to spend time learning what your coach wants you to do because you already know that. The Bruins is a good one. I look at a team like Tampa, and again, you know, Tampa always dangerous, but they've had a lot of pieces there that have been there for a while now with Stamkos and Kucherov, Hedman, still mostly on the right side of 30 as well. So maybe not running into some of the age issues that could be a problem. And that team, you got to think, like, they must be so hungry after what happened to them last year. And I just wonder if that continuity, the ability to get up to speed quickly, the familiarity with each other, that might give a team like the Lightning a really big advantage, assuming, of course, that their entire team doesn't get COVID-19.
Well, yeah,
they play in Florida.
Yeah, I was just going to say that then another factor is who can be the least impacted by COVID. And, you know, we certainly hope that once they get these players into a bubble in the hub cities, wherever it's going to be, we assume Vegas, you know, maybe it'll be Edmonton or Toronto is the other one now that Vancouver is no longer in the running. You would assume that once they get them into that bubble, the chance of contracting COVID-19 and having it spread is limited, but it's not nothing either. And, you know, the Lightning have already had, what is it, at least three players that we know of that have tested positive. We know of a prominent Toronto Maple Leaf who's tested positive. Like, these are going to be factors too. You know, as much as we talk about injuries in a usual setting of the Stanley Cup playoffs and the team that can stay the most healthy has a chance to have the most success. Well, the term healthy takes on a whole new meaning this year when you're putting COVID-19 into the mix as well.
It sure does. And I mean, especially, you know, we all hope and pray that the NHL will be able to pull this off without a hitch and that player health won't be impacted. But I mean, we also have just seen with the Vancouver hub city negotiations that officially fell apart yesterday, like, the health officials in British Columbia had questions about how the NHL intends to do things. And that does concern me, because I think the risk of an outbreak happening and sidelining multiple players from a team or multiple teams, that's a real risk, especially if the NHL is, you know, kind of shopping around for locations with slightly laxer protocols in place. So yeah, that even more than anything else, that is just a total roll of the dice. I don't think there's any way to predict which team that's going to affect, but it's something that could have an absolutely massive impact on the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, and when we look at the play-in round specifically, like, we've both brought up the Bruins and the Lightning as teams that, you know, because they're established and their cores have been established for a long time, have a chance to succeed. You know, in the play-in round, maybe a team like the Nashville Predators that, you know, wasn't necessarily firing on all cylinders throughout the season this year, but has had a lot of success and they've had playoff runs of their own. Maybe they stand to do well in a situation like this. You know, the Pittsburgh Penguins, certainly, they've got a favorable matchup because they're playing the 12th seed in Montreal Canadiens, but also they've got guys that know what it takes to win and have been through the battles before. Like, I don't know if any other teams jump out to you from the play-in round, Jamie, but those are the two that, you know, if you said to me, you know, lay money on one of the play-in round teams to win the Stanley Cup, those are the two that I immediately circle on my list.
I mean, Pittsburgh is a team that jumps out, no doubt about it, as a team that could be very, very dangerous in this process. I mean, anytime you have to go up against a team with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin on it, like, you're going to be pretty nervous about that. So that would probably be my pick as well. We've got a text here from Joey in Richmond. He says, if I was going to put a bet down, which I might do, I'm putting it down on Philly this year. Their roster is sneaky, deceptively deep at both forward and defense. If Carter Hart can hit a hot streak, they might be unstoppable, not to mention maybe the deepest bench coaching staff in the league. Again, that's from Joey in Richmond. And yeah, Philly was a team that got really, really hot in the second half of this abbreviated season so far. Lots of talent there, as you said. And you hit on another good point, Joey, which, you know, we always talk about the hot goalie and how important it is in the playoffs. Probably even more important this year. If the rest of your team takes a little while to get back up to speed, maybe your goalie can steal you a couple games and keep you in the fight longer than you otherwise would be.
And I think you also have to look at teams that have traditionally been hot starters at the start of a season, too. Because this essentially is going to be like a new season getting underway. And, you know, even the play-in series for teams that are playing in those, you know, you're playing two exhibition games and then you're playing a play-in series that is at most five games when you normally have six or eight exhibition games anyway. So the intensity is going to be ratcheted up much earlier than it normally would be to start a season, where you've got a longer exhibition season before you get into, you know, the regular season, and many veterans don't even play all of those exhibition games. So, you know, Philly wasn't necessarily the greatest team out of the gate. They did have a 3-game winning streak in late October. So that's something that'll play into it as well, I would imagine. But then you could also talk about, well, the Flyers are a team that, yeah, they've got some core pieces, but they haven't had a ton of success together as a group recently, and Carter Hart's unproven. Now, does that matter? Probably not, because Jordan Binnington wasn't exactly proven last year.
No.
It's such a I would hate to be someone that had to put betting odds on these series, because have no idea where I would put the line on most. Like obviously you're going to have the Penguins and the Oilers as favorites just based on the gap between them and the teams they're facing in the standings. But handicapping the Canucks and the Wild, you know, I would be equally unsurprised if the Canucks swept the Wild, it went to five games, or that the Wild swept the Canucks. Like, to
no
me,
question.
There's so little to choose from.
No question about it. No question about it. And I think what you have to do when you're trying to pick winners here, which again is probably a bit of a fool's errand, but I think you really just have to assume that all of these complicating factors for these teams will roughly even out, and just try to base it on how they performed before the pause. The problem is we have no idea if all those other factors will even out. They very easily could not. And that's where, you know, the risk and the uncertainty comes into play. But yeah, there is no result whatsoever in the Minnesota Vancouver series that would surprise me. Absolutely nothing.
It is Social Distance Central, Brendan Batchelor and Jamie Dodd with you. And we will crown our winner in Game of Takes in just a moment. The closest matchup in Game of Takes history came to an end about half an hour ago, and we'll let you know after the break. Was it Jordan retaining his crown, or is Ty our new champion? That's coming up next on Social Distance Central on Sportsnet 650, the home of the Canucks. Welcome back to Social Distance Central here on Sportsnet 650. Brendan Batchelor and Jamie Dodd with you. We are the official home of the Vancouver Canucks, and also the home of the NHL Draft Lottery. Phase 1 goes this afternoon at 5 o'clock, and we will have it live on our airwaves here on Sportsnet 650. We'll get to Game of Takes here in just a second, Jamie, and man, was it a close race. The closest we've seen in the short history of Game of Takes. Jordan, our defending champion, coming in arguing that Tyler Myers was a good fit on the Canucks blue line. Our number one contender, Ty Party, saying that he had higher expectations for Myers. And in the end, it came down to a difference of 1%. Ty Party is our new champion atop the composite throne with 50.5% of the vote. Jordan just misses out with 49.5% of the vote. As close as it could have gotten, almost.
It's tremendous. You love to see some drama, some high stakes here in Game of Takes. I love it.
So we'll get Ty on the line here in a second, as he now sits atop the composite throne and rules the realm. And, you know, we'll talk to Ty about his take here in just a minute. But, you know, from listening to these guys both bring their opinions on Tyler Myers yesterday, what do you think it was, although it's by the slimmest of margins, that pushed Ty over the edge that he's able to win?
So I would say probably one. I mean, Ty was obviously very well researched, had put a lot of thought into the issue, and came with a lot of statistical backing. And hey, that's always very useful when you're trying to win an argument. You know, not everyone cottons to the advanced stats in hockey, but it can certainly help sway people. And then I think the other thing is there's still an underlying level of discomfort with Tyler Myers' contract in this market. And that's very understandable. And, you know, we were trying to zoom in just on his impact on the ice this year, but it is hard to separate his performance and your expectations of him from the contract. So I think it was, you know, people still look at that and say, even if he did play, you know, maybe better than I was hoping for when he signed that deal, man, those last few years really make me nervous. I think that probably helped sway a lot of people to Ty's side.
So Ty is our champion, and we'll chat with him here in just a second. Amazingly close, and we've been really impressed with the feedback and the interaction we've had on Game of Takes to this point. It shows you, though, how split the Vancouver market still is on Tyler Myers. And you're right. You can't necessarily separate him from the contract. Like, you know, we couldn't say, oh, Louis Erickson had a great season because he worked really well on that fourth line. Like, everybody knows he's making $6 million. That's going to be part of the conversation as well. But, you know, it does really show to me, because not everyone is going to just listen to the arguments and vote solely on the way they presented them. A lot of people are going to come in with their preconceived notions about a guy like Tyler Myers. And it really shows to me that it is completely split between the Canuck fan base as to where Tyler Myers sits. But we have our new champion on the line now. He is Ty Party, and he is our winner of Game of Takes this week. Ty, congratulations. How does it feel?
Oh, that was like a triple OT win, Game 7. What do you say?
Yeah, it came right down to the wire. Were you nervous about things this morning? That, you know, I think for most of the time you had a slim lead. I checked this morning, and I think it was 51% to 49%, and the margin got even slimmer from there.
I think it also shows, like, just how divided this fan base is about Tyler Myers. Like, you know, you've got guys that, you know, obviously his offensive game speaks for itself, but I like to look at the whole picture of it, and, you know, I guess it really just shows how divided the fan base is on him.
How big a part of this conversation for you, and, you know, you laid your point out well when looking back at this season, when it comes to Tyler Myers and his performance, how big a part of this conversation is the contract, though? Because it does seem like something that you can't get away from when you talk about a guy like Tyler Myers.
Well, I think I look at it as that, you know, every player, regardless of, you know, what your expectations are for that player, I think the bottom line of it should come down to their contract, you know, a little bit, because that contract is a big piece of how you're building a team. So if you're going to pay a guy $6 million to be a fourth defenseman, and, you know, credit to you if you're going to do that, it's obviously going to impact your ability to bring in players for your top six or other players, you know, if you need a second-line winger to be a contending team. If you're paying Tyler Myers $6 million on the bottom pair, then that's going to handcuff you later on down the line. So that's where I think, you know, my expectations for him weren't to be a first-pair defenseman, but that the expectations for how much he's making have to obviously be higher because of how much he's making.
And Ty, you know, the conversation about Tyler Myers this week has been a fun one, because I think we're really entering a period of transition for the Canucks blue line, obviously with Quinn Hughes and Tyler Myers coming in this year. And then we know that, you know, Chris Tanev, Alex Edler getting older. Tanev is a UFA coming up this year. There's been a lot of debate amongst Canucks fans of, you know, should they keep Chris Tanev and maybe let Troy Stetcher walk, or should they go in the other direction? Where do you come down on the Tanev versus Stetcher question?
I actually put a thread on this. So I dove into the numbers of it. And the thing about Chris Tanev is, you know, he's been so good for this franchise, and you can just have nothing but respect for the guy. But when I look at Chris Tanev, I see a guy that has always just been so good at defense. And we've always seen him as the guy. He never really had an offensive game, but his defense was so good that we never really had to worry about his offensive game. And just seeing, you know, whether we want to attribute it to age or injuries or how much that guy's put his body through, his defensive game has significantly declined. And I looked at his shot suppression numbers compared to the average player in the league, and real adjusted plus minus, which attempts to isolate, you know, his impact on everything from shot share to his suppression of shots, and then that's going to account for his opponent's teammate, every, you know, the whole list. And his numbers have really declined this year. And I think from playing with Quinn Hughes, obviously, Quinn Hughes makes him a manageable defenseman, but when you look at it, the way is you're going to get Troy Stetcher, who's way younger, probably, you know, anywhere between $2.5 to $3.5 million. I think you lock up Troy Stetcher because you know that Troy Stetcher is going to be relatively safe in terms of how much you're paying him. And Chris Tanev, you got to worry about how much more has this guy got left in the tank and how much more is he going to decline down the road.
And, you know, another thing we've been talking about this week, Ty, is specifically related to the Tyler Myers debate is, you know, the results with Myers and Quinn Hughes on the ice were actually quite positive together. And obviously you attribute a lot of that to Quinn Hughes, but Tyler Myers played a role there too. And, you know, when you look at how Travis Green has deployed the Canucks defensive pairs this year, are there any tweaks like that that you'd like to see going into this playoff run? You know, maybe mixing the pairs up a little bit from what we saw for most of the season?
I think the thing with Tyler Myers and Quinn Hughes is nobody talks about is that that pair is used a lot in like the third period, kind of when they're kind of boost their offense a little bit. And Thomas Trantz was pointing that out. The weird combo I've always wanted, but like nobody seems to want to do it, is Troy Stetcher and Quinn Hughes on the top pair. I really want to see that, but nobody will do it.
That would be interesting. I think probably there are some concerns with the size of those two guys playing together, but, you know, maybe it would work. It's not really something that we've seen the coaching staff go to this point, so it could be an option. Ty, you are our champion this week, which, of course, means you get to choose what topic you want to defend your title with atop the composite throne next week. So we're going to give you three options here, and then you're going to choose the argument that you want to have with a new contender next week. So your choices are A, the JT Miller trade, and whether at this point you think the Canucks won or lost that trade. B, who the Canucks MVP was for this past season. Or C, the legacy of Alex Edler as a Vancouver Canuck.
Let's go with the classic debate of MVP.
There you
I
go.
I love it.
Congratulations, Ty, and we'll hear you on Game of Takes again next Thursday. And, of course, if you can defend your title and stay atop the composite throne, we'll have you back on the show on Friday.
Thanks for having me, boys.
There you go. That's Ty Party at TParty21 on Twitter. He rules the realm atop the composite throne.
My reign has just begun.
And, of course, that means that Jordan, who was our champion last week, a valiant effort. He came oh so close to winning again this week. But when you lose on Game of Takes, you know what happens.
Dracarys.
And now his watch has ended.
There you go. And now his watch has ended. So Ty is our new champion, and he will be back next week. And again, you know, he mentioned it there. We talked about it before. Tyler Myers, the opinion seems to be split right down the middle through the Canuck fan base.
Yeah, it's no shortage of strong opinions on either side. Yeah, and I want to give a shout out to Jordan for giving a very, very valiant effort at defending his throne. It's not easy, man. Once you climb to the top, all of a sudden there's a big target on your back and people are coming for you. So we'll see if Ty can manage to fend off the challengers this coming week. I'm excited to dig into the Canucks MVP discussion because that one's interesting. It's not a binary this guy or this guy conversation. There's a lot of different ways that you could go with it.
Well, and we even got into this earlier in the week, and you and I differ on where we sit on this conversation. I think it's Jacob Markstrom. You think it's Elias Pettersson. And, you know, there are people out there that'll be listening right now that'll be going, are you kidding me? It's obviously Quinn Hughes, or come on, it's JT Miller. Like, that's a good problem to have for this Canucks team, that there's four guys that you could legitimately say were their best player this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when you think about it, I mean, that's not even there's still quality below that tier in guys like, you know, Bo Horvat. Brock Besser had an up and down year, but still a strong player. Like, it's very interesting that we're not handing it out by default anymore. We're not scrounging to come up with someone worthy of being the team MVP. You actually have a surplus of candidates that could vie for that title.
So that'll be the debate next week on Game of Takes. You'll have a chance to tweet at us or text us starting Monday with your opinion on the most valuable player for the Vancouver Canucks this past season. And if you come with your take, you make it strong, you'll have a chance to go up against Ty next Thursday and a chance to be on the show on Friday. Interesting thing that Ty brings up there, though, is, you know, as you put to him, the choices on the back end in terms of what they do with pairings. He would like to see Quinn Hughes and Troy Stetcher, which isn't really a traditional pairing that you would think the Canucks would go to. But, you know, Travis Green is going to have all sorts of lineup decisions to make, and especially at the forward position too, where he's going to have a surplus of guys and he's going to have to choose on a night-to-night basis who to put in the lineup. He was on with the guys on the starting lineup this morning, and they put that question to him about how hard some of these lineup decisions might be.
Yeah, I think as a coach, you know, a day doesn't go by that I don't think about things like that, your lineup, different situations. You know, the one thing is we've challenged our players to come back better players, much like the end of a season, like you guys talked about. Who's to say a guy doesn't come in and he's improved over the 3-4 months, and he's worked out hard, and he's a better player. And I have some lines in my mind, but I also know we're going to have to make some tough decisions on who's in and who's out of the lineup. And, you know, some of that might happen throughout the camp if someone gets an injury. Or maybe just someone doesn't get up and running the way they need to be, and they don't quite have their skating legs under them by the time we need to go. So I don't want to just have lines in my head that are set in stone. I think that'd be foolish by our part of the staff just to say this is the way we're going come hell or high water. But there's definitely some combos that we've thought about. You know, you're thinking about power play, but you're thinking about penalty kill too. You need penalty killers and different matchups, obviously, against a team that you know you're going to play. That's part of it.
Come on, give us some scoops, Travis. Give us some scoops. Come on, spill the beans.
No, I'm being honest with you guys. I got a couple lines that are, the people in Vancouver fans, they, you know, it's not rocket science on some lines that have been good for us, and you're hoping they're going to be good again. So we'll have to kind of wait and see, because there's also 15, 16 forwards that have a chance to play, and only 12 of them are going to play. So it's something I think a lot about.
That's Canucks head coach Travis Green this morning on the starting lineup. If you missed the interview, you can hear the whole thing online at sportsnet.ca/650, or you can get the podcast of the starting lineup as well, wherever you listen to podcasts. And Travis alludes to it there, and I think it doesn't take much to read between the lines and realize that he says, you know, I've got a couple of lines that have been successful for us. The top six, you know, assuming no injuries or health issues, seems to be pretty set in stone. It's going to be Miller and Pettersson on the top line. It's likely going to be Pearson and Horvat on the second line. And then depending on whether you want Besser with Pettersson or Toffoli with Pettersson, you have options to flip-flop those two guys on the right side. But what's going to be really interesting and some tough decisions for Travis Green particularly will be the bottom six forward group. Because as much as we can talk about, as we just did with Ty, how you want to break down the pairings and, you know, are you going Hughes with Myers or Edler with Myers and Hughes with Tanev or even Hughes with Stetcher, as Ty suggested. You know, those are five guys that you know are going to be in your lineup. And then, you know, as we saw all year, it could be Jordy Benn, it could be Oscar Fantenberg. You know, that pretty much is your six defensemen set in stone. But I would guess that if we polled 10 listeners as to what they wanted their two bottom six line combinations to look like, we would probably get, you know, 7 or 8 different answers just based on the number of guys they've got in that mix.
And the guys that I think maybe have the most cause to be really concerned, and it's probably no surprise here, one of them I think is Jake Virtanen, and the other one is Antoine Roussel. You look at those, I don't see, you know, Adam Gaudette playing center and having handled that third line center role pretty well. I would be surprised, unless he comes in, you know, not in great condition to camp, that if he loses that spot. But you look on the wings, and I mean, you have Michael Ferland coming back who could challenge for one of those spots. There's an outside chance that Josh Levo could be ready
to challenge for one of those spots. And even, you know, some we've seen that Travis Green hasn't been afraid to play Brandon Sutter on the wing in certain situations. So if that's a way he thinks maybe he can get Jay Beagle and Brandon Sutter both in the lineup consistently to, you know, move Sutter up to the wing on the third line, like those spots are very, very much in play. And I really like what Jake was able to do this year. I thought he had a really strong season. So I would very much anticipate him locking down that third line spot next to Adam Gaudette, but you never know. And I mean, Travis Green also talked at length today about, hey, I've talked to all my players and there's no excuse to come in out of shape. And we know that at the first training camp this season, Jake came in out of shape and there was a bit of a blow up about it. And, you know, that was a lesson he had to learn. So the possibility exists that if he's not in absolute tip-top condition and ready to go, you know, that spot could be up for grabs.
Well, and a part of this conversation too is going to be about the team they match up against and the way they want their bottom six to look. You know, it's easy on paper to say, oh, you'd like to have a third line that can provide you offense as well. But if you're playing, you know, the Minnesota Wild, you know, they're not necessarily a physical team, but they've got some bigger players. And, you know, a guy like Zach MacEwen had success in the head-to-head matchups that he featured in against Minnesota this year and was really coming on in his development late in the season. So if you want to just have a little bit more grit, a little bit more meanness on that third line because it's going to be playoff-type hockey, you know, is a guy like Zach MacEwen a more attractive option than someone, you know, of the same mold as Jake Virtanen? And then you talk about, yeah, if you assume Adam Gaudette's going to have that center ice spot, then you've got to move Brandon Sutter to the wing. I know lots of people listening would like to see Sutter out of the lineup, but I can't imagine that that's something Travis Green would entertain, although he has surprised us with his lineup decisions in the past. But, you know, you go down the list here and guys that, you know, are in that bottom six mix, Gaudette, MacEwen, Mott, Virtanen, Beagle, Roussel, Sutter, Erickson, who, you know, most people would assume wouldn't get in there, but he does provide something to them as a penalty killer. And then you throw in the wild cards of can they get Ferland or Levo back? That's a ton of guys for only six spots. And I don't envy Travis Green because those are going to be some hard decisions when it comes down to it.
Oh, they sure are. And the Ferland question is really interesting because, you know, they went out and signed this guy in the offseason as UFA for a reason. They obviously really like what he can bring when he's on his game. It's been really tough, you know, just on a personal level, watching Ferland have to navigate the injuries he's suffered this year. But if he is able to come in good shape and get his game to, you know, where we've seen in the past what he can do in a playoff style game, you know, they would love to be able to throw him out there in a bottom six role. And I think they'll give him every opportunity to prove that. But yeah, that just means another pretty good player is going to be sitting in the press box watching this.
And you'll be back in a few minutes here with Dan Riccio on Reach Deep. What do you guys have coming up here on the show this afternoon?
Got a good show today. Butch Carter, former Raptors head coach, coached Vince Carter when he was a rookie and a young player in Toronto. We'll talk to him a little bit about Vince's retirement. Dave Pagnotta, as we have every Friday on Reach Deep, talking a little bit about the Hub City decision and also the CBA fight unfolding between the NHL and the PA. And also JP Barry, of course, mega agent in the NHL, to get his thoughts on the escrow issue and some of the other player concerns.
So that's coming up in just a matter of minutes here on Sportsnet 650. Again, a reminder, we will have the draft lottery phase one live this afternoon, starting at 5 o'clock right here on Sportsnet 650. That does it for Social Distance Central this week. I am off next week, but Bick will be back in this chair on Monday for another week of Game of Takes. Ty Party, our new champion, talking about the MVP for the Canucks this past season. But Reach Deep is up next right here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.